Hi, good evening, and welcome. Today, this is Philippa Burgess from Creative Convergence, and this evening it's a chat with Guy Magar, a writer, director, producer. He's directed over 60 episodes of TV episodic and 5 feature films, and also the founder of Action Cut, which is a phenomenal resource for writers and filmmakers, both as a weekend intensive and through the competition, where he's really had the opportunity to mentor and launch some fantastic writer-directors. And so welcome to this evening's call, and we will be taking questions as we go. And to raise your hand, you press 5-star, and that kind of shows me on the back end that you've got your hand raised. So we're going to get started. Guy, are you on the call yet?
Yeah, hi, everybody.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so
are we recording?
We are.
Great.
All ready to go. And welcome. And tonight we're talking about how to use short films to launch your career. And you obviously, that is something that that you did, and as many, many other well-regarded and well-respected directors who've had long careers such as yourself have also used short films to make that happen.
Well, it's kind of a must. You know, if you want to become a director, you've got to start making short films. It's something that we talk about a lot at the Action Cut seminars, and I encourage everybody to do that, people who haven't started yet or people who've been thinking about it or have an idea but don't quite know how to begin. And also for writers, you know, I tell everybody at the seminars that to write and direct is probably heaven in the movie business. For you to direct your own screenplays or your own shorts is absolutely the best high that you could possibly have. So for a lot of writers who write and have never thought about directing, I also encourage them to try and direct some shorts, because if they find out that they like it, then they can write their own material, which is absolutely the best way to go. And I started at the London Film School, where I made a documentary in London on the homeless people. It was called Soup Run, and it was a 10-minute documentary. Black and white. At the time, I was thinking about becoming a director of photography because I was in love with cameras. And I sent it to the San Francisco Film Festival, which has a great documentary section, and it won the Grand Jury Prize that year. And just by having that happen made me really focus on moving forward on a career and changing from being a director of photography to directing. So for me, my first short committed me to the industry and committed me to start directing, because when you win one of these things, it means a lot, because there's hundreds of movies at these festivals, if not thousands, that are competing every year. There's thousands that compete at the Action Cut Short Film Competition, for example. So that was my first experience of shorts. My second one was when I went to the American Film Institute. I made a film there called Once Upon an Evening. It was basically a 25-minute action piece, and I spent the next 6 months showing it around because I wanted to get an agent with it, and that's what happened. I got my first agent with this short, and without the agent's help, I was able to show it around to everybody and anybody who would look at it, including an executive at Universal, and he loved it and thought it was one of the best student films he had ever seen, and he offered me what they had at the time was called a Spielberg deal, which was a 7-year deal they used to give to young people. They gave out about one a year. Unfortunately, they don't do it anymore. And that year I got that and got a 7-year deal at Universal, which started me in the industry from a short. And we have all heard about, you know, shorts starting a lot of people's careers, like, you know, Steven Spielberg, who made Amblin, and that got him at Universal. And he was the very first one, obviously, to get the Steven Spielberg deal. And he got a 7-year deal at the time, through Sidney Sheinberg, and that's how he started. We all know George Lucas did his USC film. I think it was called THX-118, which I don't know if people only think of it as a feature, but that started as a short, and eventually he developed it into a feature film. And every day, you know, there's shorts that come out of festivals and or agents see them, and people move on from there. I know you know, a couple of them recently was something called George Lucas in Love, and, that was directed by Joe Nussbaum, and he went on to have a career in features. So it's really how you start. You know, when you're a writer, you sit down and you write screenplays, and you try and get an agent or a manager to represent you and to try and sell it, and you move on from there. If you're a filmmaker, you got to do a short.
I was going to ask you, because when I was at ICM, I remember that was just always like candy, is that these, particular shorts, that was really hard to get ones to be really good and to sort of get our attention. But once they got our attention, they would spread like wildfire. I mean, it wasn't about us representing this guy. Often by this time, they either were represented by our agency or another agency. But it was just, we had so much fun with them. We just thought they were great, that we would just be they'd be pass alongs. Like, we'd make extra copies just to be like, have you seen this? You have to see it. And it was just one of those sort of social things where you just want to see something really fun and make sure everybody else you knew saw it as well. And I think now you're sort of getting that with user-generated content and what we're seeing on the internet. But I remember at ICM, from an agency's point of view, when you got those things that were really, and usually it was like, but there's a formula though of what really works for shorts. So because that's the thing, is you can make them, but if you don't make them well, it's the ones that are really well made that can really open a lot of doors.
There's
can you
no question
sort of speak
about
to the difference
and
between what, you know, what really is going to make something like be that pass along video versus something that just kind of isn't really going to make the cut?
Absolutely. I mean, I remember when we started the Action Cut Short Film Competition 4 years ago, we didn't even have a student section at the time. It was just documentary, animation, and fiction. And a student film won the Action Cut Grand Prize, and it was made at Florida State University by a Chinese woman. Her name is Yiming Jin, and the name of a film was called The 17th Man. And here was a woman not of this country who came here, went to film school, made an incredible short, ended up winning a bunch of competitions, including ours, and went on from there to raise money to make her first feature. I mean, this is a great example of what something like that can do for you, whether you do it in a film school or you do it independently. Like you said, if you make a short and it's a good short, it's gonna get a lot of talk and make a lot of noise. And I think that is so important for everybody out there who's been thinking about a 5-minute idea or a 10-minute idea or a 20-minute idea, you know, to actually make it happen, because it can actually change your life if it turns out to be a good short and starts making noise. And in a few minutes, we're going to have two winners from the Action Cut Short Film Competition this year. I invited them as guests on this phone call, and they will be talking about, you know, how they got to make their shorts and what it took to get them made, because for them, it's like your business card into the industry.
Absolutely. Now, but I want to talk about what's changed, because it's an entirely different social landscape in terms of distribution, because before, you would hope to sort of have it as your calling card and to send it to somebody, or you would hope to be able to screen it at a film festival. But now with the whole where broadband and internet and technology has sort of, and just our sort of social networking has sort of taken us, now when you make a short, you can get it to a much, much wider audience. And you know, I mean, that has definitely made it much more exciting, I would think, to be a filmmaker now, because you have more opportunities.
No question. I think the last 10 years and what's been happening with the internet and places like YouTube and all the others, I really believe it has been an explosion of interest in the short film format. And, you know, on YouTube you can see something for 30 seconds even. But I think one of the important things to remember is this explosion has a lot to do with, obviously, the digital revolution and being able to get, you know, digital cameras and in-home editing facilities like Final Cut Pro, for example, which is a great program and not expensive, and most people making movies have them at their homes. You find that it has changed everything, because it made it possible for everybody to go out there and shoot film. And the whole landscape and the whole revolution of what that is all about actually created a phenomenon. But the problem is, it's not about equipment, and that's what people don't get. It's not about having a digital camera and a Final Cut Pro program. It's about knowing how to tell a story. And a lot of people, and I can say that because I see a lot of the films in the competition, as much as, you know, ambitious as their story is, they're not well told. And they're either confusing or they get boring in the middle, or, you know, a million things happen. Because visual storytelling is actually a craft. And unless they know that craft and what to do with it, then having a camera and editing facilities will not make them the real good filmmakers, no matter what they're trying to do, until they learn visual storytelling. And that's what the Action Cut Seminar is about. It's really about teaching visual storytelling in 2 days so that it equips people with knowing what to do with this equipment or what to do with the idea that's in their head. And, you know, the whole seminar is based on scene studies, scene study after scene study.
And I went to USC Film School, and I'm a huge fan of what you're doing because it even in USC, I mean, we catch a couple issues. One is the financial issue of how much does it really cost to do these things. And I think one of the reasons I think both the value of both being at a USC Film School or being at your seminar, I think, is the idea that you create community. So even if you don't spring for the editing system or the camera, you're going to meet someone there who's already got those things, and you can start team building,
right,
put projects together.
Right.
But I was going to say, being at USC, one of the things is we found these technically superb films, but the thing they didn't teach us was how it was story or working with actors. And I know that from your professional experience, those are the two of the things that really are your strength. I mean, beyond the technical stuff, which can be learned, that's really your strength is both the visual story, the use of story and the use of acting, which, like I said, is, for as much as I love USC and it's an amazing place to have gone, it's just that's always been the weakest link and just not something that's really emphasized in the program.
Well, I got to tell you, what you just said is real true from most of the film schools that I know, and I know their curriculums because I teach. And even where I went at the London Film School that I loved and the American Film Institute that I also loved, there were no courses that dealt with visual storytelling in how to get your script in an incredible shape so that it works from A to Z. So every line of dialogue is great. Every action has been thought out. It moves along at a great pace. It's got great turning points and great surprises. And the 3-act structure is there so that if you have all that information, which is not taught at film schools that much, they really do teach mostly about the technical part of filmmaking. Even now, and we'll talk to one of them shortly, at film schools they're even teaching CGI and all the new programs about computer graphics as far as visual effects and all that good stuff. But again, how do you use that in a story so that it makes sense? Because it's not just about the CGI. It's always, at the end of the day, about the people and about the characters and the character arcs and what people are doing and saying and what is this movie about. I got to tell you, a lot of the films that I see at the competition, I'm not really sure what they are about. And the reason is that whoever made them did not focus on telling their story properly. And again, at the Action Cut seminars, we do scene studies. I give them scripts of pages of actual scenes, and then they read the scenes, and then we talk about the scenes. How do we make this happen? You know, what is the location? It says restaurant. It takes place in a restaurant, but what kind of a restaurant? What is this scene about? And you begin talking about the storytelling part of that scene, including who do we cast? How are they going to be dressed? And on and on and on. And then we talk about how do we shoot it. You know, is it going to be a 5-shot scene, a 10-shot scene? And then we turn off the lights and we actually see the shot. They get shot lists in their hands and they actually get to see the actual dailies because I wanted them to be there when I shot that stuff and I keep my dailies so that they can actually see each shot being shot. And that's where the learning curve gets real, real quick because they actually are not only reading about shots on a piece of paper, the camera tracks left to right and ends up on a close-up of her face as she starts crying, they actually see that shot. And then we show how the finished scene ended up, which is how it was cut together with effects and music and showed on TV or in the movie theater. After you do that for 2 entire days, you walk away equipped with a technique, with a way of looking at a script and figuring out how to shoot it. And that's the visual storytelling part that they get. Then you can go out and shoot anything you want because you'll be able to handle anything that comes on the page after you go through 15 scene studies at a seminar. And that, unfortunately, is not given at the schools, unfortunately. And that is because most of the schools, they have a lot of people with masters and PhDs and wonderful people who can talk about theory and history, and all that's important. But what they don't have are actual directors with dailies that can share that with people about how to get a scene from the page to the screen, and that's what we do.
Well, I would say on a rare occasion they do, But I will say it's usually part of, you know, a whole curriculum, you know, a BA program and or a master's program. And even when I was at USC, and of course I was there like 10, 15 years, but I remember one day like looking at it and thinking, I was like, wow, I pay five, and this was like 10, over 10 years ago, I'm like, wow, I pay $578 a unit. And you know, my whole education was $100,000, and this is just my undergraduate education. So, I mean, what you're teaching in your, and most people, I mean, especially having worked in the business for as long as, you know, for me, I've been here a decade, and for you, you've got a solid, you know, two decades of experience. You know, you're offering, you know, a lot of it's like people, it's like, well, they go, where do I start? Where do I break in? Where do I? And I know for me, like even before I went to USC, I had started working as a PA, and then continued doing that because I would go back and forth between LA and New York, and I worked for Ron Howard, I worked for ABC, but I was constantly kind of finding sort of ways in, and that's, like I said, another reason I'm just such a huge fan of the seminar, because you get your way in, you get to meet a peer group, and I look at like my peers, and you mentioned Joe Nussbaum earlier, because Sidney White and Seven Dorks, which is just coming out right now at Universal, like he's one of my classmates at USC, and really launched a fantastic career off of a short. And so, I mean, with the education and the contacts and the sort of the way in, you know, you really get that at, you know, in an intense weekend, and you get that sort of for a price that you can't get through sort of traditional university.
And that's exactly why I started Action Cut 9 years ago, because I was trying to provide something that I didn't get when I was in film schools. And like I said, I've been to two of them. And I was thinking the whole time, what is it that I wish I had before I broke in, which I didn't have? And how do I help people when they do get in on the professional level? And the visual storytelling is what it was all about. And so I designed a seminar that's all about that.
That's great. No, just real quick, because I know we've got some other guests coming in, but just because you do have, you're just kicking off, you know, the fall tour, and you got, you're going to be sort of doing a nationwide, and I know it's kind of challenging because you do have such a busy schedule with your, you know, you've really worked it out around your other projects.
I do. That's why I do them back to back. I do a tour in the fall and a tour in the spring. That's really all I can do, but. The one coming up starts in October, next month.
Yeah, so you're going to be, I've got it in front of you here. So you're coming up to Fort, you're going to be in Fort Lauderdale, just actually, what, like 2 weeks from now?
Yeah, and we're in Fort Lauderdale on October 12th and 14th. And then I go to Chicago on the 19th and 21st of October. Then we're in L.A. the first weekend in November, and we're in New York on the second weekend in November.
That's fantastic. That's kind of an intensive. And all of this is for under $300.
Like, yeah, it's $295 the early bird, and you know, I always wanted to make it possible and affordable to anybody to take it, because the whole idea is to kind of give back and help people figure out how to make their dream happen, you know, and it's happened so many times through the seminars. First of all, it's a great pleasure to travel to those cities and meet the filmmaking community in those cities, but I've met so many writers and directors through Action Cut, and they've gone on to make great shorts and or write really cool scripts, and it's just a wonderful way of you know, meeting people from around the country.
That's awesome. Now, can you also talk about, you've got the visual effects with John Gress, and sort of this is the first you're giving that as that's an added kind of part of the curriculum.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is the very first year that we're actually teaming up with another seminar, because CGI has become such a big deal in visual effects, and now there's programs, you know, it used to be really expensive to do that stuff, but now there's programs that make it available on your computer to be able to make amazing visual effects. Even if you're making a short, you can have amazing visual effects, and the two guests coming up are going to talk about that in a couple minutes. But what I wanted to do was provide that as part of a weekend, a super film weekend. So I teamed up with the Effects Institute there in Florida, and they have an incredible instructor. His name is John Gress, and he's going to give a six-hour seminar on visual effects on the Friday night for 3 hours and on the Saturday night for 3 hours. Action Cut is 9 to 6 Saturday and Sunday. So in one weekend, people can actually take two seminars and walk away with amazing knowledge about visual effects as well. And that's the first time we're doing it. And I have a feeling we're going to be doing it again next year, because the response has been pretty great.
Oh, that's so fantastic. Now, I think, I mean, like I said, you have just a very distinguished career, just as a as an aside, because I know we're going to move our energy to the guests in a minute, but I just to kind of, for the people on this call, we've got a really cool offer. People, just to kind of give a background on myself, kind of having come up through USC and ICM, and I'm on the business track, I'm a partner in a literary management production and entertainment consulting firm, and with what my specialty has sort of emerged as in marketing for writers, because I love sort of seeing just people be successful and navigating the business, and I'm just, hugely passionate about that side of it. And I'm, networking is just such the lifeblood of the industry, and just relationships and relationship building. And so, again, that's another reason why I just find weekends like that you put together really cool, because people can really connect with a peer group and team build and do all of those kind of things. And so one of the other things that I'm sort of involved in helping to put together is set up a Hollywood by phone, so that people have the opportunity, wherever you live in the United States or North America, to connect with people like Guy.
That's a great idea.
And really kind of have access into the industry and really talk to people on a personal level, understand who they are, how they came to be, what their job entails, what they're looking for. And every week we have a guest, and we have really fantastic guy was actually a recent guest there, and we have really fantastic guests, upcoming guests, agents, managers, executives, producers. Jason Blumenthal, who produced Pursuit of Happiness and several other fantastic films, and his deal over at Columbia is an upcoming guest. And they're all very open to queries, and we just really love to just kind of provide that for people. And so like I said, being kind of to say, just I'm really supportive of what Guy is doing and wanting him to be very successful and really get a great next round of students into the fall tour, have just offered that as a bonus. And so it's a $280 value that we're kicking into for anybody who registers, who is on this call, for any of the fall tour, Fort Lauderdale, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles,
and that's Hollywood by phone for like 6 months.
Six months, which we're now. Chris, it's run through $1 million screenwriting. Chris is never offering that ever again. He basically, but he also being a fan of Guy's and having, Guy being on his one of our guests recently, said, he would, happily do that, because he wanted to wanted to match it as close as he could, dollar for dollar. So the idea that you were sort of doubling your value. By getting the $295 action cut, you would automatically, pretty much get the equivalent for free, for being part of that. So.
And Hollywood by phone is every Sunday night, right?
It depends on the availability of the guests. They do about 4 or 5 calls a month. Some of them are Sundays, and then every once in a while we'll mix it up with either a Tuesday or Thursday evening.
Oh, okay.
But there's always a calendar and a schedule, and they're all MP3'd and they're all transcribed. So if you want to be there on the live call, you can, and otherwise you can always, you'll own the MP3 and you'll own the transcript. So it's a great. The response we've been getting from it is just both from the industry. The guests love it. They're all. Teleconferences are sort of new for them, so they're having a really fun time with it. And it's been great. We sort of piloted it 3 months
ago.
Well,
I'm grateful to you and Chris for offering that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, well, like I said, we find things we love, and we love seeing people be successful. And I know that you, that's our business. That is our job, is to help people succeed. And I know that that's exactly what you do, which is, I think, why we got on so well, and why I'm just so supportive of what you're doing.
Well, thank you. So, that's great.
So there you go. So that's So then there you go. So anyways, do you want to tell people, where do they go to sign up? They go to Action Cut.
Yeah, if they sign up at actioncut.com for a seminar, once you sign up, you'll come to a page and it will give you the link to sign up for Hollywood by phone with your 6 month bonus.
Awesome, that's fantastic. So we really encourage you guys. And the early bird rate doesn't last too much longer. So definitely.
Yeah, the early bird for Fort Lauderdale runs out next Tuesday, and then it's October 2nd.
Okay, and then the other ones are kind of
every Tuesday after that.
And the bonus offer I know is a limited time offer, because I think Chris has really got his head around no more 6 months. I'm not doing 6 months, so but he was happy to do it for you. So this is definitely
great.
A going gone, never to be seen again kind of offer. So definitely encourage people to to sign up for that. So our guests, I don't know, are they, do we have our
Jeffrey,
guests?
Are you on? Jeffrey Durkin?
I guess not yet.
Can
That's
you see
guy.
Him
we've
on the screen?
As
a guest? Or?
You know, I'm going to actually go ahead and we've had some, I noticed there were some questions. So I think, let me actually turn it over to our audience for a moment.
Okay.
And see what we can do in terms of getting some of those guys on board and seeing what the questions they have. Give me a second as I pull that up. Okay. It's going to take me a second to pull that up. So I want to ask you another question about, now we are talking about, actually I'm just going to kind of just even chime on to shorts launching careers, something like South Park. That was actually one of those pass arounds that I was talking about. So it's both for film and for television, and also The Simpsons, which I sort of love the story of that because so much of the stuff is just very serendipitous, and it does sort of start out really small and then kind of grow. And we sort of, I think, as the audience to things, sort of see the fully grown oak tree and don't always remember that started out as an acorn.
Yeah, really. Truly. There's a whole bunch of television shows and features that really came from shorts. I mean, that's, again, I cannot tell you enough how important it is to make a really good short and, you know, being able to take that to the next level, whether it's going to get you a job or an agent or a manager or be able to, you know, have them sell that idea to a network, which is what South Park did, basically.
Yeah, no, South Park did that. And I was going to say what I liked about the Simpsons is the other thing. The Simpsons is just the idea that it actually, I guess, with Matt Groening is James Brooks. Someone had given James a gift of one of his sketch drawings,
right,
his Life in Hell, and that had ended up on James Brooks's wall.
Wow.
And I think he kind of was like, oh, that's kind of cool. We should see about talking about commissioning this as a series. And Matt didn't want to give away the rights to that. So he said, let me see if I can create something new. And I think another just piece for, again, on my side of it as a literary manager, what makes things stand apart, and I think whether it's in a short film or a script or a movie or a television show, is a sense of authenticity about,
right,
no matter what world you're creating, you maintain that suspension of disbelief and it feels authentic.
Right.
And I thought it was really funny just reading his bio that his mom is named Margaret. His dad is named Homer. His sister is named Lisa. You know, and I think he had to disguise the identity of his brother by calling him Bart.
Had to be.
And just the idea that that's his, you know, that he kind of, you know, a lot of these things are sort of created from people's sort of own experience, telling their sort of their personal stories.
Absolutely.
And now with your short, I mean, did you sort of find ways in which you sort of saw yourself in what you were doing in terms of identifying kind of themes and content that really were authentic to you?
Well, you know, I had made documentaries, like I said, and the only way to really break in, you can't use a documentary to become a dramatic film director because they're two completely different worlds. Basically, there's no script and there's no actors in documentaries. So when I went to VFI, I wanted to make a film with a script, with actors. That way I would make a film that would open the door to the actual film industry because I wanted to get into television. I wanted to become a television director and then eventually a feature director. So, you know, that was the last time. And for me, making documentaries is one of the purest forms of filmmaking, and I'm a huge fan of them. I watch National Geographic all the time, for example, and things like that. But, you know, in the end, I wanted to direct actors, and I wanted to work on television shows, dramatic shows, and I wanted to make feature films. So I had to make a short that had a script and obviously a story and actors in it so I could show that I can handle that. And that's what started my entire career.
That's awesome.
Go tell ahead. Me, can you tell on your screen if there's any other guests up?
I've just been pulling it up, and it was just it realized it wanted me to re-log in, so I'm doing that right now. And so that was just going to take me a second because I didn't want to turn it over to because I think our guests, if our guests have the guest code, they should be able to plug it in. But if they don't, they'll probably, if you're a guest and you don't have your guest code, I would say please go ahead and raise your hand so that I can give you the information that you need.
Because Jeff said he was going to be on about now, and I know he's got something to do at 7, so I wanted to be able to get him on pretty quick.
Right.
He's the San Diego area code, if that helps.
Yeah, no, that'll help a lot. Yeah, as I was just looking at it as
858 is your area code, 414, 858-414 if you see it.
Yeah, my web manager has decided that it just wants to be frozen for a minute, so I'm
okay, is Corey Main on? Corey? Oh, it's too bad. I think the guest code is not working so well.
All right. Well, I was going to say I can give it to our guests if they need it. It's the 88 star.
66631.
That's right. So if you're a guest, that would be, you know what to do with that.
Anyway, if
I'm
you see
guys.
858414, that's Jeffrey.
Okay. My web manager has decided to freeze on me, so I'm just going to keep...
Sorry to hear it.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just like,
Can you call on anybody who's got a hand raised until then?
No, my web manager gets me into my I had it up before, and then it timed out, so I'm trying to get back into it. Let's see. Give me a second here, guys. I think my...
Do you want to leave for a second and come back in as a moderator?
Bear with me just one moment. I'm going to throw you onto it. Oh, here we go. I got it back. Okay. Oh, you know why? It was on. I figured out what the problem was. Okay. Let's see. I've got some questions, but I don't see.
Jeffrey, is that you?
I 424.
Corey?
Hey, welcome.
Hey, guy.
Who's this?
I just figured out the guest code thing. I was like...
Who's this, Corey?
Yeah, it's Corey.
Hey, Doc Corey. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. Corey won the Best Student Film Award at this year's competition, and I called him about 3 weeks ago when the judges picked his film, which was called Without Warning, and of all the hundreds of student films that came in, now it's the one that won. So congratulations again, Corey.
Thanks very much.
And until we get Jeff online, let me talk to you for a little bit.
Sure.
People always want to know, I know you made your film in Canada, where you're from, and you made it while you were at Sheridan College, which I'm sure you went to study film, obviously. But can I ask you, and everybody always wants to know, how do you get an idea for making a film? Can you talk real quick about your idea for making Without Warning?
Well, for that, yeah, sure. That specific one, it just, I've always kind of thought, you know, like stick with what you know and stuff. So I was, you know, growing up, I was obsessed with tornadoes and storms and stuff. And then when the movie Twister came out, you know, that just, you know, enhanced it more. But basically, it started out as a school project where we had to grab a published photo and make a movie, a short, simple movie that was kind of inspired by this photo. And I found one that really, I thought it had a lot of power to it. It was like two giant tornadoes that landed in I think it was Missouri in 1965 on Palm Sunday. And it was just a great, like, black and white image. And I thought it's just an image I wanted to, I thought I could get a lot of ideas from, and that's kind of just where that came from.
I know you co-directed with Ryan Stone on it. Did you guys sit down and start working out the storyline?
It kind of started out, we had to kind of pitch the movie idea like as if it were a real film, and so we did that individually.
Right.
And then if you got greenlit, you choose your group. So I, you know, and then to kind of make the workload a little bit lighter, I've worked with Stone before, and he was, like, awesome to work with. So we kind of got together a group after that, and it was like me and him and Kurt all kind of had a hand in writing. Kurt was the one who actually did most of the story.
So the whole idea was to do a story about these tornadoes and really wrap it around a love story because,
started out like as it started out more complicated than it was. And then, you know, Stone and Kurt were like, no, you know, we only have this much time, so we got to chop all this. And it made a lot of sense. So, so we brought it down to kind of a bit of a cliche love story, but yeah.
Well, one of the important things about short films is to be succinct and to be able to tell your story in a short amount of time, which is a whole different ballgame than telling a two-hour feature story. And one of the great challenges of a short, whether it's 5, 10, or 20 minutes long, is to be able to tell a story and have a three-act structure and be able to have a complete start, middle, and finish within that time frame, which is very difficult to do. But it's a great training for writers to be able to do, and I highly recommend writers to write shorts. I want to jump to the CGI part because that's really what stood out. At a film school, to do the kind of CGI work that you guys did was amazing. I mean, those tornadoes in your film are amazing, and the skies are amazing, and the atmosphere is amazing. Can you talk a little bit about that, about the graphics part of it?
Sure. To begin with, when I was pitching the idea, I really had no idea how I was going to do any of that. we had a lot of really great teachers there, if you want to talk technically,
which programs did you use, for example?
Right, the majority of the software we used was probably Adobe After Effects and Apple Motion.
Okay.
And Adobe After Effects was used mostly for all the compositing, and Motion was used for a lot of particle elements that we would either generate fully in motion or key out like little pieces of debris and put that through the particle system in motion, which is basically Apple's version of combustion.
And you had to learn how to do all that?
I had Motion already, and it was kind of easy to learn just because they taught us combustion in school, and they are pretty similar. I heard something about the people who created Motion were actually the people who got fired from combustion. It wouldn't surprise me because they're very similar, but yeah, it was a lot of the technical stuff was definitely accredited to what we did learn in school.
Tell me the actual, I know you didn't have any cows flying, but some of your effects are as good as the ones that I saw in Twister. Did that take a long time to do? I mean, was the graphics part of a film one of the most challenging?
Yeah. Right away, Karen, our producer, knew that, we would have to budget a lot of time for post, for the graphics and the score. So we spent about two solid months without a lot of sleep working on graphics. So it took about 2 months. And then we handed it in, and then I went back and touched it up for about a month. And then,
well, I got to tell you, most people who are listening, by the way, probably went to the website to see it because they were invited to do that before the phone call. So, you might have a question or two coming up.
Oh, sure.
Regarding
I have some questions, and everybody's really interested in me when I had to figure out my back end here, but I've got it all sorted out. So I'm gonna jump in here and grab some questions. Got someone starting with 646, ending in 240.
Sorry.
You are now unmuted. 646, ending in 240. Hello. Welcome. All right, I'll shout that one out again, and if not, then I'll move on. So 646, ending in 8240. Okay, next one, 661, ending in 9817. And, you're now unmuted. 661?
Hello?
Hey!
Area code 661.
661, 646. Okay, I've got... They're connected. They're there. I'll put 661 down for a second. Let's try... we've got... hold on. Let's do this. I'm calling it out, but it's not unmuted just yet. 512, ending in 2925. But it's taking a second to unmute. Oh, there it is.
Hello?
Hey.
Yes.
Hi.
How are you guys doing?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Los Angeles, California.
Great.
Earlier, you were talking about the internet and how that has exploded and helping us short filmmakers. I'm curious because people have told me about distribution through the internet. Have you heard anything or know places that are good for distribution through the internet?
I think that, Philippa, you were talking about that to me the other day, about the different distribution places that are opening up for shorts on the internet.
Oh, definitely. I mean, obviously, we're seeing sort of everybody and anyone kind of putting their stuff out on YouTube. But some of the stuff, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I sort of on the music video front, and actually one of the things we're doing another call, we talk about visual filmmaking, and Guy was talking about the one shot. If you saw sort of OK Go and what they had done with Here We Go Again, and that's all done as a one-shot, if you look at their blog and kind of where they were and kind of how they grew through that stage, YouTube completely threw them over that sort of line into, you know, major sort of celebrity. And it was just sort of fun to watch kind of how quickly that all happened for them. And so I think that one thing is if you just have really great content, it will get out there and will get noticed. Yes.
Hello, hi. Hi there, sorry.
Okay.
Who's this?
Jeff Durkin here.
Hey, Jeffrey, we've been waiting for you. How you doing?
Yeah, how's it going? Hey, guys.
Congratulations on winning the grand prize. Jeffrey Durkin is from San Diego. He made a movie called Animal Decay, which is on the website, 10-minute film. And, Jeffrey, let me ask you a couple of quickies because I know you got to go.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about the initial idea for Animal Decay?
It all started with a photo shoot I did down in Tijuana when I went down there to do some architectural photography. I started to see this environment, this dense kind of old environment that looked like it just had kind of grown out of the earth by itself. And that was the area that just kind of inspired me. So I started to think about, you know, what type of characters would live in that environment, what type of people would be there, what would they be doing. And I started to just generate a story from the site.
Wow. And how did you go about shooting it? I know you told me when we met for dinner a couple of weeks ago that you shot it over a whole bunch of weekends over a year.
Yeah, I shot it off and on. It was me, a friend, and I would hire a day laborer to come down there and translate, speak Spanish for me. I befriended a couple cab drivers that would drive me around the city and film. I had a camera in a backpack looking like a student on the streets and just run and gun.
And you brought your actor down every time?
Yeah, my actor drove down from L.A. Luckily, he's a high school friend of mine, so I knew him before, and he knew what he was going to get into. So he had his brother who lived in San Diego, so he would come stay with his brother and then meet me in the morning. We'd drive down to Mexico.
And the whole idea of, which is an amazing idea, of a guy who is looking for somebody and he's like, you know, one of those guys that go down there to get somebody and then eventually, you know, the whole place and the atmosphere really gets to him. And one of the things about the film was atmosphere. And I know I talked to you about that, which went a long way for why the film won, because it was so seething with Tijuana kind of a feeling where it was really, really hot with very hot highlights and extremely contrasty. And then you told me that you put the film through a bunch of passes regarding visual effects. Can you talk about that?
Sure, Guy. Yeah. What I basically did is I shot the film in mini DV just kind of as raw footage, and then I watched the movie Traffic. It was coming out right around that same time, and I noticed Traffic had this kind of hot orange, you know,
right. Really
kind of really boiling orange. So I said, okay, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to go with the blues. I'm going to go with the high contrast blues, just, you know, the other end of the spectrum. So I got some software. Magic Bullet Suite is the name of the plugin. It works right with Final Cut Pro, and it's got tons of different finishing filters, is what they call them.
Wow.
Yeah, to give you that cinema coloring look, just on a little home desktop system.
Unbelievable! It has an amazing look. I got to tell you, we were stunned by it.
Nice.
And it was just by putting it through different passes.
Yeah, it's basically just a plug-in. I took the raw footage. I may have had four or five filters on top of it to really get it to where it was at. I had one filter for grain, one filter for color, one filter to give it a little bit of a glow and a softness to soften that harsh video. and another filter for contrast. So, you know, quite a bit of rendering time and some technical, you know, some technical stuff. But
by the way, Corey Main is also on the phone, and if you want to say hello, he won the best student film.
Cool. Congratulations.
Oh, awesome, Corey. I loved it. I watched everything two nights ago to brush up.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the editing process? Because you told me your film was actually much longer, and you eventually cut it down to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
What was that about? Was it just focusing on the best story that you could tell?
Well, Guy, it happened for a few reasons. One is it got shut down from every festival I sent it to.
Really?
Yeah, so that was the first problem was out of discouragement. I said, okay, something's not happening. Then I started to read books about shorts, and one rule I kept seeing is that if you do a short, it's got to be under 10 minutes, unless it's really, really good and deep. And since I kind of had a visual piece on my hands, I figured, let's make it more linear. Let's trim out the fat, and then I entered it to Action Cut, and then the results, you know, the results speak for themselves now.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, isn't that amazing?
Huge difference.
The editing really focused the movie into what it was, the best that it could be.
Yeah, I went off the handle and did an original director's cut, and I wanted everything in there because I worked so hard on it, and then finally I got the feedback from the family and other people, and they're like, you got to streamline it, so... It was kind of
what was it like to win the grand prize at Action Cut?
Well, it was amazing because up until then I was just a designer in San Diego working in architecture, and now it's like revitalized my whole filmmaking career, and I'm back with new productions in tow, websites, and you know some meetings.
Well,
so,
one of the things that we do, we provide a package that I believe is second to none regarding meetings with people and receiving a lot of gifts from the industry sponsors. Can you talk a little bit about that? I understand you're going to meet a very famous production designer named Joe Alves, who designed Jaws and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting Joe. I wanted, you know, designer to designer. I'm looking forward to just kind of chatting with him and seeing what I can learn. We got the same school of thought. So that is coming up, which I'm looking forward to. And then... you know, all of the other media that comes along with it. The interview for Script Magazine is happening. I got an email today.
Are you on some weird phone or something?
No, I'm on a landline. Can you hear me okay, Guy?
That might be me. Sorry, I'm on a cell phone.
Jeffrey.
Yes,
your
yes.
Your phone's doing weird things. Is that his phone, Philippa?
What's the problem? Can you hear me, Guy?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
But for some reason, something weird is happening on the phone. I don't know if anybody else is hearing it. Philippa, are you? Hello?
Guy, I can hear you, Guy. I can't hear Philippa.
Philippa, are you there? Philippa? Hmm.
Maybe something happened with her connection.
Yeah, I've got a feeling she might be trying to get back on or something. Anyway, Corey, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you. Can you still
okay,
hear
great. Can you tell us what you're doing now? I want everybody to know what happens after film school. What are you doing now?
Well, it's kind of the equivalent of, it feels like a walking off a cliff, right? It's like, it's not, you know, there's no set, you know, like becoming a lawyer or something. There's no kind of process. You got to... But I'm right now I'm in LA for the first time, working for Sony Imageworks. I graduated last April and I was I had a really good start at a co-op position at the small effects house in actually they're one of the best in Toronto, called Intelligent Creatures, and I co-op there for 6 months, and then I got to kind of build up my reel and I sent it out, and Sony just happened to be hiring for Beowulf 3D right now, so I'm ATDing on that. And
Beowulf 3?
Sorry, Beowulf in 3D. It's going to be in 3D. But
oh, the series.
I'm just used to saying 3D, but it's for the movie Beowulf.
And did the film help you get the job at Sony Imageworks?
Yeah. They were pretty impressed, which is really nice because I mean I must have sent out maybe about 50 applications and only heard back from maybe 3 people, and on like the very last day of my last interview, like my third interview, I come home from Toronto And then my mom was like standing in the driveway. She's like, "You had a call from Sony Image Works."
Wow, that's great.
So,
and again,
yeah.
You know, I can't begin to tell people how important it is to make a short. Like for you, it got you into Sony Image Works, and you moved here, and I think that's incredible. Jeffrey, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here, guy.
You told me that you were thinking about developing the short into a full feature. Is that still on the board?
That's happening. That's what my friend Steve and I are working on right now. So we're stretching out the story and kind of dealing with character arcs, elements of that nature. And then I'm working on another short. I decided, hey, I'm a filmmaker. I got to keep things moving. So I got another small project that I want to get out really quick and just get some new exposure with.
And again, that particular project starts with an idea, and then you develop a storyline?
Yeah, the way it works for me, guys, since I have an architecture background, it all starts with the city, the location. Like, where is this going to take place? And then I drive everything out of that. So that's kind of my, you know, architects look at the site
Hello?
First. Hello, guy.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're having that weird noise again. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're coming in fine.
All right.
Okay, like I was saying, I start with a location, a city, and then I kind of extract characters and events out of that.
I'm really sorry, Jeffrey. You keep cutting out, and there's a problem with a call. Is Philippa on? I think we lost her, and she's like the moderator, and she controls the phone calls and all that stuff, so I can't even call on anybody. We might have her hand up until she gets back on again, and I think she's trying to do that.
Okay. Can you hear me okay
yeah,
now, guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as long as I'm okay. Okay. Hello?
Yeah, so you're in San Diego. Were you thinking about, I know we talked about at dinner, maybe you moving to Los Angeles?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about that, guy, and I think for the short term, I'm going to stay in San Diego and keep making films, keep, you know, doing it the way I've been doing it, and
right.
And just trying to get some money and resources down here. There seems to be a lot of money in San Diego, and a lot of money wants to get involved in the film business. So I'm going to follow that while I've got the tiger by the tail.
Okay, good. Well, again, I want to thank both of you for sending your movies into the Action Cut Short Film Competition. Just so you both know, the whole idea of a competition was to do what it is exactly doing, is to discover new filmmakers and help them move on to their careers and offer them not only industry meetings, but over 125 prizes that we give to everybody. I know both of you were amazed at the prize list.
Oh, yeah.
The whole idea was to help you move forward. Did you receive your EP scheduling and budgeting software?
Actually, I did, and actually yesterday I met with Joe Alves, which was amazing.
Oh, you met Joe?
Yeah. And it was so surreal. I don't even know where to begin. But honestly, I've never like the prizes are amazing, and the other people who won the other movies on the site, I've never been so impressed by other. I mean, I've been to the Toronto Film Fest, and I was kind of like, meh. But this is truly amazing.
Well, I'm really glad. I think what the best thing to do, since we don't have Philippa, and I have to apologize to everybody who's listening.
Hey, guy.
You're back.
Ah.
I've been trying to get back, and then I finally was like, okay, I just got to call. I got to recall it in, because we were in the middle of answering a question. And I think it's a really important thing as we talk about using shorts to launch your career. And so I throw this back out there, because on the question of distribution, we talked about now production, we talked about editing, we talked about where the idea comes from.
Right.
But, I want to wrap up that question, and then I'd love to take a few more questions. So,
okay, Jeffrey, I got to ask, I'm going to let you go, because I know you have a meeting coming up, and I think some of the interference sounds like it's coming from your phone.
Okay.
So I want to thank you so much for joining us, and good luck to you, buddy. I'll talk to you.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, guys. Good
all
luck
right,
to
Jeffrey.
All the callers. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay.
Corey, you there?
Yep, I'm still here.
Hey, do you want to take on kind of finishing the thought we'd started before, which was on the distribution?
Oh, sure.
Because I know that obviously we're watching things rapidly evolve, and is social media, social networking, seeing people being able to package a show. You can package a short or a book and get on ISBN, was it ISB ISDN code and sell it on Amazon. I mean, there's all sorts of ways that, like, the power is back in the hands of the people to get your audience. And now Hulu is setting itself up as the next competition, you know, next sort of site for the next YouTube sort of site. And, you know, I don't know. Do you want to expand on that and sort of where things are going?
I don't have a lot of I'm not sure I have a lot of insight on that. You're talking about the like avenues to put your film out on the internet.
Yeah.
I just thought, well, you know, how distribution is definitely expanded.
Yeah, it's definitely I'm so new to this whole thing. It's kind of hard to, you know, what to go on. But I guess, you know, the Without a Box website is basically how I found Action Cuts, and there's a million other film festivals on there, and that's actually probably one of the most useful websites I know of. There are probably some other really good ones, but
I actually agree. That's a wonderful resource, and I think it's definitely worth, for those who don't know it, you know, and they do, you know, help in terms of getting things through the festival route. I think the other thing that's, you know, just internet marketing has really given people the opportunity to get the word out. So even if you're at a film festival or you're available for viewing online or download online or whatever, I mean, just the ability to create a mailing list, create a fan, you know, a fan site, really sort of generate enthusiasm, you know, collect your reviews and collect what people are saying about your film and, you know, doing all of the stuff that was really always just in the hands of professionals and people with a lot of money to be able to sort of
you can really get it. A good objective audience opinion on the web, definitely, and that's what's really good, especially for filmmakers. So you never lose that audience perspective, and people will, you know, openly say a lot of stuff on the web. So you can get a lot of good feedback, and you can take what you want, and you know.
Yeah, I think one of the things I always say with a lot of our clients is there's like kind of a fine line between, you know, you want to be completely and totally engaged in the feedback loop. You want to make sure like you're listening to what people are saying, you're taking the best of what they have to say as constructive, and using that, and then at the same time remaining absolutely and completely impervious to criticism.
Yeah.
And just knowing like, hey, this is what I'm meant to be doing, and it's not always a perfect process, but you learn, you grow, you take the feedback, and you keep on and you do the things that ultimately, I think, being able to connect directly with the audience. The other thing also is I'm also thinking in terms of the difference between the one-off short and now with what's changed in the internet is this idea of the serialized short.
It's becoming really big. You know, we're starting to talk about millions of dollars and setting those up, which I think is great.
And there's, everything from, I know, actually, not only is it they're generating money because, you know, the idea is like all content is paid for, and it's a simple sort of principle, but I think it's a good one for sort of filmmakers or content creators to own, is that it's either paid for by the end user, like i.e. them going and purchasing a movie theater ticket or buying a book, or it's paid for by the advertiser trying, you know, to get to that audience. And so they'll sponsor it. And if you look at sort of Lonely Girl and, you know, tying in with Neutrogena, and a lot of these sort of advertisers are kind of now sort of getting on this, you know, figuring out like what is, you know, how they can sort of feed into the content and the stories. And then you've got things like Chad Vader, and actually, I mean, quite tons of them that sort of are in sort of episodic mode and are drawing, like you said, you know, millions of viewers.
Yeah.
So those are kind of all sorts of interesting kind of trends that we're definitely seeing as social media. And I think one of the things, I was at a conference over the summer, and what was really fun was they were saying where the internet was in sort of, say, 1990, trying to figure out what was possible with text is where it's at right now with video, which is the tip of the iceberg. We haven't even scratched the surface of where the internet and broadband is going with video. And I know we're talking about shorts, and we're seeing a lot of shorts on the internet, but I was also thinking, like, things that I'm seeing that I'm just, like, are really cool is, like, this integration between television and the internet is, like, you can go to NBC.com and not just get the supporting world of a show, but see the show itself. You can watch the entire episode of Heroes online. They don't care. Or you can be watching Desperate Housewives on your phone. And the idea is that content can be consumed in any way and any as the technology expands. And that was another interesting thing that came out of that conference, was that everybody from a technological point of view was just, their head was spinning, going, wow, nobody really knows where this is going. But the through line of it was, like, great content is always going to be great content. Great storytelling is always going to be great storytelling.
Absolutely.
Great acting is always going to be great acting. And that no matter how much the technology is changing, if you have those tools and you can tell a great story and you know the rudimentary, and that's, like I said, another reason why I'm just so excited about these seminars that you're doing, and a great way to just get people started, get people in motion, that doesn't change. That doesn't change. And what you find that people have a real pack mentality about material. If it's good, it's going to be good. And if it's not so good, it's not going to be. And the response, I mean, when we send out and sell scripts to the studios, it's usually kind of find a general universal response of people generally love something or generally just don't. Every once in a while you get the things that, you know, have a particular niche audience. But I think that that's one of those things that so getting it to be great is really the biggest challenge, and there's a learning curve, there's a knowledge gap, and I think the only way to sort of engage is just get started wherever you are and surround yourself with like-minded people. Should we turn over for a couple other questions?
Sure, that'd be great.
Let's see how this works. 949.
Hi, yes, can you hear me?
Yes, how are you?
Hi there. Hi, my name is Stephanie Bell. Philippe, I think we actually know each other from through Lynn Grant.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Hey.
How are you? I am a producer, and I've done actually 4 short films, one of which is one best short film at the Westwood International Film Festival.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, thanks. And it's gotten into a bunch of other festivals as well, and I'm still kind of going through the circuit of it. But I'm having a little bit of a problem kind of going to the next level in terms of getting the shorts out to get seen by agents and to be able to kind of, you know, utilize the benefits of having won this award, and also I've got a couple of other really strong shorts that we're submitting out at other festivals. But how do you go once you've won festivals and once you've got these made and you're submitting them out? I don't quite know where to go in terms of the next step to get, you know, to kind of not only for myself as a producer, but for the writers and the directors and the actors. So I
can I ask you real quick what the film is about?
Sure. Well, this one is actually called Tag, and it's about a guy in his 30s who's been playing the game of tag for like 10 years with his coworkers, and he's never been tagged yet. And it's beginning to destroy his life, and his wife is pregnant, and he wants to get out of the game, but his coworkers won't let him. So they hire a mercenary to basically tag him to end his reign. And it's a very funny kind of about him basically trying to avoid getting tagged, but how does he get out of the game in the meantime? So that
is it done in a serious way or in a comedy way?
It's a comedy.
Sounds to me like it's an idea for a sitcom. What do you think, Philippa?
I don't know if it's a I think you actually just asked the $1 million question, which
yeah.
is Stephanie. It really comes down to is. Where do you want to go from here? Because I think that's to answering the $1 million question of using shorts to launch your career,
mm-hmm.
the question that everybody always asks in Hollywood is, that's great, what's next?
Right.
And so you really have to, it's great to show up to somebody and say, I mean, someone just handed me a short the other day, and two people just handed me shorts in the last, 72 hours.
Right.
And they handed them to me saying, hey, can you take a look at this? I shot this. And, you know, I've got a script that is a spec script that, you know, I've got this and I'm currently, you know, I've got, and you know, I've got a TV spec that I'm writing. I'm really
right.
looking at staffing.
Right.
And so it really has to be like when you hand it to someone, it's like, okay, but in what context are they viewing it? Because
it.
For us who gets people into studio jobs, am I going to be able to get you a studio job off of this? Now, if
right.
you say, hey, I'm, you know, Doug Belgrad's a huge fan and, you know, Tomac, like I have the whole, you know, you have fans who are like,
right.
we love you, but they still kind of want to bring you in on, you know, do you have, probably, do you, so you got to figure out like kind of deconstruct what your next steps are
got
so
it.
That you're not really, because an agent's not going to really want to represent you just on a short because
right.
where are they going to get you a job?
Got
but
it.
If you have the short to say, hey, look, people think I'm great and I'm really talented. So,
right.
you really want to be reading my script as well.
Got it. We actually are developing this into a sitcom, by the way, as a series.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so.
Well, this
is
fantastic because if you're doing, we've just did a pilot for ABC and are doing another one for CBS Paramount now, but even with developing sitcoms, it's like all about your showrunner. And so
right.
the idea that you've done a couple things really well because by creating a short, you've actually created rights.
Got
just
it.
Like we do, we sell the things, projects we've been packaging are books.
Got
and
it.
So we're walking in with rights because
Got
just
it.
As having an original pilot, you're not really going to get very far without the showrunner, and it's hard to get the showrunner to pay attention to maybe just a regular script. But if you go, hey, here's a short, and then they can kind of riff off of it, and because you really need them to sort of move it, especially if you're going through network.
Got it.
But another trend we've seen is that all the cable channels have become mature brands,
mm-hmm.
and it's really exciting to see how much original programming and original
right.
content is being developed in the cable market, which is entirely new, did not exist 2 years ago.
Right, right.
For
so
example,
you
your particular short that is this story about playing tag.
Yeah.
Have you heard of something called the Game Show Network?
I have, yeah.
GSN?
Yeah.
That sounds like the kind of thing that maybe you could develop it into something like something for them because they're all into doing game shows.
Interesting, huh? That's a very clever idea. I hadn't
thought
about that.
I think that's why I asked what it was about because I think you need to focus about who would respond to this material.
Right.
And, you know, how do I get it going? Now, one of the ways that you can do it is by going to GSN yourself. But if I were you, I would try and find out what producers have sold shows to GSN.
Okay.
As Philippa was talking about, because it really comes down to the showrunners.
Got it.
And if it's a showrunner that was successful, even at any kind of a game. I know, for example, there's a very popular poker game at 9 o'clock on Mondays, which is on GSN. I don't know who the producers are, but, for example, if you could find that out
right.
and go to them, they already have an in at GSN. They already have a show. So if they like your idea, your tag idea, then it's just a matter of them going and presenting it with you. And that's what showrunners do. They have the access to the
right.
people in programming that you don't. So
right.
whenever people tell me they want to get into the television world and they want to create a show, I always suggest for them to do a lot of research, find out what shows are either on the network they want to be on or is similar to what they've done.
Right.
And see if they can get a meeting with that producer, which is a lot easier than going to a network where
right.
you're not going to meet the big guys. You're going to meet the second and third tier guys who always say no.
Right, right. So going to the producer, that makes a lot of sense. Okay.
So finding a showrunner becomes the key to creating a television show from a short.
Got it. Okay.
Everything is always going to be like, yeah, where to next? What do you? And that's advice for everybody. It's like once you've done this, it's really presenting to people, you know, I've done this, I've proved myself, and here's what I want to do next. And
right,
sure
right.
That's a logical leap. Now, the other thing is also looking at taking everything Guy said now in terms of also reverse engineering it, like looking at the list of what are the cable channels and go, okay, how would we develop the show as something for GSN?
Right.
And then how would we develop this for Style Channel? And how would we develop it for Comedy Central? And how,
right.
you know, because you're actually going to be developing it slightly, because all of those are so into the brand identity and
mm-hmm.
branding being sort of a relationship, a positioning, an expectation, a promise that's different from other people. And so they're all really fighting for different market shares.
Got it.
And sometimes we'll look at something and go, oh, you know what? Yeah, we're women's entertainment. We think Lifetime would kind of actually do the same thing, so we don't want to do it. We
got it.
Actually do, so they're actually trying to differentiate themselves.
Right.
So unlike a feature which you might say, oh, okay, we'll take this to Paramount and Universal and Warner Brothers, and then they're sort of all competing for the same thing.
Got it.
We find that when you're working in – we actually just did something like that with Lifetime. Our client of ours had optioned a true story and written the script, and he wrote it as if he was going to sell it to ABC Family.
Mm-hmm.
ABC Family passed, and then he had to kind of do this supplemental treatment for Lifetime, and it's actually starting production next month for Lifetime. But it was like, okay, but if we're going to do it for Lifetime, here's how we would do the rewrite. And then that they bought it off of that, but they needed to see that it was a different movie.
Right,
than
right.
he had written it. So that's just another way to sort of play with those ideas.
Great. Well, that's great advice. Thank you very much. It's been very informative listening to this. And again, I wish I could take your class this time, but I'm going to have to wait until the next time around.
Next time we'll see. I look forward to meeting you.
Thank you very much. And Philippa, nice talking to you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Hello. Did we lose her? I was just...
I'm here.
Okay. I was just...
getting that weird noise again. Is that you, Philippa?
Yeah, okay. I was just going to call on someone else, and it was the weird noise came when I clicked
weird.
On. I was going to call on... 978, ending in 1953.
Hello?
Okay, I was going for... Hello? 978?
Hello?
Yes, hello, welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
I was
barely.
Speak up. Barely.
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you. Just speak up a little more if you can.
Okay, let me try that. It was actually a different – I'm a different area code than 978, but it just said that the line was unmuted.
Oh, okay, perfect. So, welcome.
Okay. I'm kind of backtracking a little bit. Just want to thank you guys for putting on this seminar, teleseminar. But want to backtrack a little bit. Guy, you mentioned earlier in the conversations and in the start about a good short. And,
right.
This is kind of open-ended, but I'm wondering if you can expand on what does good mean? What does that entail in your mind?
Okay, I can tell you from watching hundreds of films that good means great story.
Got it.
Great storytelling. So it not only starts with the original idea, because any idea can be good or bad. It depends how you're going to tell that story. You know, if you think about, for example, if you get an idea, I want to do a bank robbery movie, okay? That's all of a sudden you're inspired by that idea. Okay, you can turn out to do something like Tarantino did with his bank robbery movie, Reservoir Dogs, or you can turn out to do a different kind of bank robbery movie that was done years ago called Going in Style, which was about three old guys who felt bad because they didn't have enough money from their Social Security, and they decided to go ahead and rob a bank. So here are two completely different stories about the same idea. So it comes down to how do you tell your story? How do you develop your script? So your script is great. And before you make a short, when you write a script, you should hand it to people that you respect who are hopefully experienced in the film business or maybe a screenwriting teacher in your town, I don't know where you're from, or somebody, and get some feedback. And you're going to find out that, for example, and we talk a lot about how to do that at Action Cut, for example, you got to open a short big. Big means of a big scene to immediately grab the audience into the story. The worst way to begin a short, or any feature, by the way, is of a dialogue scene. So there are rules about how to tell a story and grab the audience immediately. And then once you have them with a great opening, then you start developing a character. What is it that happens in this story? You know, is this a single woman with five children who's trying to rob a bank so she can feed the kids? Well, how are we going to do that to make it work so that she turns out to be sympathetic? Because we certainly feel for her for having to feed the kids. So it becomes, how do you tell that story? How do you develop that character? How do you get great dialogue out of it? So when people are talking, it's interesting and fun, or it's full of emotion or whatever it is, if it's a serious piece or if it's a funny piece. And how are you going to end it? It's got to have a great ending of some kind, a satisfying ending. It's got to have basically a three-act structure, which always works best. So when you tell me, when you're asking what makes a great short, I always begin with a great story. Once I have that down, once it's great on paper, then I got to get some really good people to work on it. And it starts with the actors. One of the worst things that happens in shorts is that people don't use professional actors. A lot of shorts, people use their grandmother or their girlfriend. It can't happen. It might be a lot of fun to do that. But amateurish acting really stands out when you're watching a movie. And in every city in America, there are professional actors. Every city of America has some kind of acting group or a theater group or whatever. And it's your job to find the very best professional actors. And after that, you're going to have to find the very best people behind the camera. Photography's got to be really good. The sound's got to be clear. Things can be out of focus. You're going to have to find a great composer at the end to give you a great music score. You do all those things, and you've got a great short.
Got it. Yep.
Yeah. And I totally, like I said, just having come up in the business sort of through film school and just through work, we all help each other. One of the things I always say about working in entertainment media is really working in a community of people who know each other. And it's, again, you know, for anywhere, you know, I think that's why with sort of the fall tour that Guy is doing, it's really an amazing opportunity to just connect with like-minded people and start team building, because you never, you know, you can get each other to read the scripts. You don't know, like, everybody's kind of got something different to add, and you're meeting sort of people who are in your general geographic area, so you can really sort of help each other. So I think that's, you do get sort of, again, I always remember when I grew up in New York and I was just trying to figure out where I wanted to go, and I was working in
film in the PA in high school, and I was like, and everybody's like, you know, you don't go to film school for exactly what you're going to learn, even though you'll learn great stuff, but you go for the community, you go for the relationships, you go for the people.
And networking is huge at Action Cut. I mean, we do a lot of networking during the seminars. We eat lunch together, for example, both lunches on Saturday and Sunday. We eat together. We network together. There's a networking table. People grab each other's resumes or business cards. And, you know, the whole idea is that in that community, everywhere that I go, people team up and they make things happen. When I was in New York, somebody from a New York seminar met somebody from a Philadelphia seminar. Because we have on the website, we have an alumni networking page, and they find each other, all the Action Cut people, and they actually started a feature film company, and they're making their fourth film now. So what she's talking about, networking becomes a huge part of making it possible for you to make your film.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny that you guys just went into that. Is I was actually going to ask, you know, some suggestions apart from the seminars and, you know, signing into a full-time film school. Someone transitioning into the industry is, you know, just about to ask for suggestions on connecting with people, because one of the key
90% of it, I think, is just showing up. And,
yeah.
And the best way to get in front of people is that kind of sense of repeated interaction. Because people like to work with people they know and they have a sense of comfort with, and you immediately break down so many walls with people when you talk about a mutual acquaintance or a mutual experience. So it's that idea of you just kind of keep showing up, and very soon you will find yourself sort of in familiar company. And then the same thing when it comes to looking for an agent or looking for a manager or producing partners or crew or editing equipment. It's really just putting the word out and saying, hey, this is what I need, and it will lead you. And I always just believe really strongly in terms of not making the finances prohibitive, because I know a lot of people immediately sort of get stopped going, oh, you know, I can't afford this. But I kind of feel strongly like if you're on mission, if you're on track, if you're doing what you really believe you're being called to do, the resources show up, the opportunities show up. You just have to really trust the process and just have faith in what you're doing and faith in what you're being called to do, and just really trusting that even though you don't see the bridge will be built. And you'll be challenged, but you will be supported. And I feel like that's, you know, and I've seen it being an entrepreneur, being in entertainment, having sort of been the road. It just, when you, it's sort of that idea is like, once you commit, Providence moves too, is so true. And also the idea that you can, you know, in certain you can volunteer at things, you can find ways to be mutually beneficial to somebody. And there's all sorts of ways to work it. If, like I said, once you've sort of made that commitment, that this is what you want to do, you will be surprised at how the universe kind of aligns to help you. You have to. Guy, you're a filmmaker. You know, it's like, you know, it all works out in the end. If it's not
well,
working out,
it all starts with networking.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a writer,
you need to have
friends who are writers. If you're a director, you need to have friends who are directors and producers. And, I mean, all these people across the country are making films locally with people that they know and people that they get to befriend.
Yeah. And you just like how you met anybody and became friends with anybody in your life, it was just common experiences, just, you know, just showing up and just sort of saying, you know, I don't know anybody here, but I'll come out. It grows from – it definitely grows – and it grows exponentially from there. And that's what I always find is really fun. I love working in the industry because I do feel like I work in this wonderful organic community, and that you can't quite put a hold on because it's so kind of it's always sort of in flux and expanding and growing, but you just never know how those relationships sort of come back and how they can serve you and how you can serve them, and it's really exciting. It's an exciting business, and it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. Actually, speaking of one more question here, we've got 323. Ending in 2799.
Hi there.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi. It's Ryan Bastrom. I'm calling you from Los Angeles. And I really want to thank you guys for this opportunity. My question is, you know, I think that a lot of us run around with our heads cut off. You know, where I know this is a common question, but where do you find the people who want to help you with money? I mean, where do you find the people who want to fund films? Where do you find those resources? Because, I mean, they're books and things, but I mean, where do you as filmmakers actually go to find these people?
Hello?
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 getting some odd feedback.
We're having problems again with the line. I don't know if Philippe is still on. Are you on?
I'm on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear all that weird noise?
Yeah, I took the question, but I muted it out, so I think that might have been the line that was, but I think if we can go back and answer the question, I think it's better now.
Okay, unfortunately, I missed most of it.
Oh, okay. So what I was hearing was he was saying, where do you go to get money? Who finances these things? Where does the money come from? I can answer half of that question, but I'll let you start, and I'll fill in the gaps.
Okay. When it comes to making feature films, my first feature film was independently financed. My budget was $1,250,000, and it was a movie called Retribution. And the idea behind it was
Sorry to interrupt. I don't mean to interrupt you, but if we can bring it down, I think it's because you didn't hear the question, specifically regarding shorts, money for shorts, investors.
Oh, money for shorts. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Money for shorts, from what I know, always ends up coming up from people themselves putting it together. I mean, you know, I don't know how much Jeffrey's film cost, but I can tell you that it was very affordable because he did everything himself. And, you know, he basically went down to Tijuana for about 10 different weekends, probably cost him a couple $100 every time to go down there, hotels and, you know, the cab drivers that he was talking about. His actor obviously did it gratis, and the rest of it was done on his computer, and probably what cost the most was to acquire the programs that he did to do the visual passes that he did. Because digital cameras are so inexpensive, you can go to Sears tonight, you can buy one, and, you know, on your Sears credit card, and you can pay $20 a month for it, for an $800 camera or a $1,000 camera, you can pay $20 for it. I know Final Cut Pro costs just under $500, which I think most people can afford, or you know, wait for a birthday or Christmas and get their grandparents to give it to them. But besides that, it's a lot of legwork and a lot of effort, but it's not a lot of money to make shorts. And I will guess that Jeffrey's film may have cost a couple of grand, and Corey even less, because he was a student and didn't even have a couple of grand.
Yeah.
But he did have a school behind him to make it. So I don't think it's that expensive to make shorts. When I made my first one, it cost me $500.
And I would actually also go so far as to say, yeah, I know, I totally agree. And I'm also thinking it's in terms of, like, if you feel like, okay, it's team building. And the thing is, if you find there's an actor, there's a writer, there's a director, there's a producer, there's a production designer, there's an editor who all want to hone their craft and all want to have that reel and say, hey, look what I did. And so all of those people, any you know, will be chipping in their time and their effort and their equipment and all their stuff. Because there's a cinematographer. There's all these people who want to sort of say, hey, this is my reel. This is what I can do. And so, you know, connecting and networking and putting it out there and team building is a great way to do it. And a lot of those people will, you know, be able, you know, maybe sort of, if you really are like, and again, I'm still of the theory, once you commit, Providence moves too. But if you sort of say, no, realistically, I don't, you know, most filmmakers do sort of end up throwing that first film on their credit card. But if you really, if that's just something that's sort of not an option, you'll find that there are people who will get, again, equal value from having that film completed. And it can very well be the ones to underwrite it. I mean, there may be an actor who says, you know, I need a reel, I need a showcase. And yes, you're sort of making their movie versus maybe your movie. You know, you have to be careful politically about it, but if they can underwrite it, because they or their parents can underwrite it, you know, those are all creative ways to get money for a movie. And
remember that actors are always available if they like you and they like you what you're trying to do, because they always need new scenes to redo their tapes. Their actors are constantly redoing their tapes of better and better and better work, and the only way they can do that is to hook up with a filmmaker who's trying to be planning a short and has, you know, a role that he wrote or a character that they really love. So, you know, actors work for free on these shorts. Remember that your short's going to shoot for maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 days, maybe a week. So that's not a lot of time for them to invest in order to get back from you a copy of their scenes. And like Philippa said, there's a lot of people, especially around film schools, who are looking to light a movie or do sound on a movie or gaff a movie or, you know, do makeup or hair or whatever, and it's a matter of just hanging out in those places and grabbing people and, you know, checking them out, making sure they know what they're doing, because they're looking to put to build their resume. They've only done one or two shorts, and they would like to have, you know, have four or five under their belt before they can move up.
Yeah,
so it's not that hard to get people to work on your film besides, you know, once you have a camera and once you have an editing system.
And the reality is, if you have money and you love film, you really don't have a problem, you know, kicking in. It's you know, for the love of it, it's and so when you surround yourself by like-minded people, if they have the extra money, they're not going to think twice about, you know, kicking in as and when they can. And I mean, I just actually one of our you know, we do some on the business consulting side, and it was, you know, a small film called The Islander, and it was done as a feature. But it was, you know, the one of the producers was also the actor, and so the filmmaker, if the director is saying, where did the money come from? It was totally financed by the actor/producer. I mean, and he really was looking for a vehicle for himself, because he knew if he wanted to get to the next level, he needed a movie, and it was really critically acclaimed. It's the LA Film Festival, and it's I think it's going to be premiering cable, and it's just so there are people out there who have resources, and I think it's like once you sort of are open to it, I think you sort of have a listening more for those possibilities, and you'll just find that they sort of start crossing your path. I think there's many of the people on the crew. It just doesn't have to be the producer or the director to underwrite it. It can really come from any side. All right, a couple more questions, and I know we're kind of running long here, so I definitely want to start wrapping it up. But let's see. And just so if you're on the line and you know it is five star to ask a question. And I've got someone here in the 415 ending in 8712. But you're not unmuted yet. Hold on a second.
Hi.
Okay.
My name is Derek. Hey. Thanks much for having this conference. I'm actually in LA, even though I'm calling at 4:05. I had a question about acting. I recently graduated, and my class and I have talked about making a short, but you talked about great acting is going to be great acting, and that's a key part of making a great short. As an actor who's non-union with not a lot of credits, how would you recommend getting into great shorts?
Well, one of the things is, for example, that happens, which is a great place, and by the way, where actors hang out a lot, are film schools. And what you need to do is find out who's casting, go ahead and volunteer to read for them. There's also in the independent film community, and word does spread, a lot of independent features even that are being made without paying anybody, you know, they're real low budget, and you can always read for them. You got to find what's going on as far as production. An easy place is film schools, because they're always having productions, and finding out and, you know, talk to the director or talk to the casting person and find out if you can read for the roles, because once you start doing that, and again, it's very small amount of time for you. You might get a 1-day role or a 3-day role or a 10-day role. It's very small amount of time for you to commit even for free, because you're going to get your scenes back. And if it's one or two great scenes you've done, you'll be able to use that on your reel, because
right,
that's how actors build reels. I mean, think about it. Every actor starting out needs a reel, and the way he's going to get it is by doing shorts and by doing student films and hoping they come out good. Now, sometimes you might do a student film and it's not very good, because maybe the student director wasn't very good or the script wasn't very good. Not every student film is great, obviously. So that's why you got to do a whole bunch of them to be able to get a great scene for yourself. And you do a comedy, you hope to get a great comedy scene out of that. You do a dramatic film, you hope to get a great piece of film out of that. And hopefully with two or three scenes, you start putting together your reel, start sending it out to agents, and that's how it all begins. It's about you trying to find where people are making shorts in the community in L.A. There's tons of them happening, just word of mouth, or going through film schools that are always looking for actors.
Huh. Okay, so you mean actually physically go there and ask, can I just be a reader also?
Yeah, you can do that too. I mean, you know, sometimes they do need a reader. But, you know, if you go to a great place to go, you're not into SAG yet, right?
No, I'm not.
Okay, just so you know, for example, there's a SAG office at the American Film Institute. they have access to all SAG actors. And, you know, when you become SAG, you can go there and put your picture in there, and now they will call you every time a director sees your picture and wants to read. On the other side of it, there's a lot of places like USC and UCLA that make movies, and I'm sure you can go to their production department and find out how do you read and how do you, you know, how do you audition for student films. And that's a great way to get started. And again, it's a very small investment of time on your part, but you're going to get some experience. And the person you work with, if they go on to make other movies and you guys become friends, he'll use you again. And it grows from there.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
All right. So I think I'm just going to take one more question here, and then I think we're going to wrap it up.
All right.
Another local. We've got 818 ending in 1881.
Oh, that's me. Hello.
How are you?
Hey.
Hey, good. How you doing, guys?
Good.
This is John. I'm here in L.A. I've been listening for the past hour or so. And I guess my question is kind of like the last one. I'm an actor. And it's funny that you're talking to me about short films, because I was just talking about doing a short film.
Oh, good.
I did one before a few years ago. Over a weekend, I wrote a film called Phonies. It's about the telemarketing world. And I was trying to sell the film idea. So I did one already, but it wasn't the short film with the beginning, middle, and end. It was snippets from the, like a trailer, like a 7-minute trailer. It came out great. Just unbelievable.
Good for you.
And we didn't shoot over film. We shot it on video.
Of course. Nobody should shoot on film these days.
Right, with film look. And it was a Panasonic, I believe, or maybe a Canon XL1. I think it could have been something similar to that. But it came out great, and it wasn't very expensive at all. It was nothing. But I think the whole thing with editing was like $2,000. It was like nothing. Maybe $1,500 with everything. So my question is, I want to make a short film. I've been listening to what you're saying, what you need. You need a great story, you need some great acting, you need good production, and so on. I was just wondering if what else you think I would need. And I guess my main question is, I want to build myself up as more of an actor and maybe a filmmaker, more like an actor. And I was just wondering if you could give me some advice.
Well, I got to tell you, it's very hard to direct yourself. And, you know, people like Clint Eastwood can do it, but it's really hard for starting people to do it. And for you to make shorts as a director and have you star in them, unless you really can separate yourself and put two different kind of hats on, it's really hard. And so I recommend maybe as an actor to work on other people's shorts while you're making your own shorts, because it's really hard to direct yourself. And, you know, very, very few people can do it. If you can, that's great. But the majority of people could never pull it off and give a great performance that they're actually directing.
Well, I was going to actually have somebody direct me and all that. I was going to be the star of it along with the other, some of the people that I'm going to hire. But, I mean, I guess my main question is this still a way to launch an acting career? Almost like what these other guys did, the Vin Diesels, and he did a short film, and some of these other actors did short films or small films. I was just wondering if it's still a good calling card.
I definitely think it's a great calling card. Some of the acting in the short film competition that we have was phenomenal, and I'm sure that those actors are using the actual films themselves as their reels. And if you do act in a wonderful short and your work stands out, there's no question that it could help you. Most of the time, there's one really good scene in it, and that's the one that you snip it out and put it on your reel. But if you're going to do a short that focuses on you and you're the star of a short, and it's a great short, there's no question that it could help your acting career.
Okay, so it's you can still do the film festivals and all the things. And then try to win awards, except it would be more for, you know, I guess acting instead of.
Well, most film festivals that I know about, especially the shorts one, there's not that many, by the way, because most film festivals, as you know, focus on features. or they have sidebars for shorts, like a section.
Oh.
Ours is all shorts. It's got to be under 30 minutes to be in the Action Cut competition. But if you do make a short, usually it's the directors and, you know, sometimes they give a Best Cinematography Award, things like that. I don't know a lot of places that give a Best Acting Award, if that's what you're asking. At Action Cut, we basically focus on the directors. I mean, the directors are the winners, and the directors get the prizes. If there's phenomenal acting in it, that's probably one that's why that film won. But we don't give Best Actor Awards, for example. We really focus on discovering filmmakers.
I was going to ask, I was going to say, even when the ones that, with what a guy just as a follow-up to what you're saying, is I think, you know, so much of this business is about, again, trusting the process and just being engaged, and that 90% is just showing up and, you know, remembering that every oak tree you see was once an acorn, and you just have to plant that seed and just keep watering it and giving it sunshine. It doesn't need a lot. As long as you keep doing it, it will just kind of grow. Is that if you're in a short, and it's being, even if it's a sidebar, but it's screening at a festival, you go. Because you never know who you're going to meet. It's like, yeah, I was, you know, so go everywhere the film goes. Be part, you know, plan on being part of that tour. Plan on being, you know, just in that. And that, and if it's a great scene, you know, edit that scene into your reel. It's because that's just, that a great reel is what's going to help you get.
Right.
And basically, it's not get an agent. It's giving the agent the tools to do their job so that they can work, you know. So it's really, I mean, I think that's, you know, a lot of people, because I'm on the management side, you know, representation side, a lot of people feel like, oh, you know, we're the gatekeepers. It's like, no, we just need the tools to do our job. And so we're not going to take on something where we're not empowered. So, you know, getting a great reel is what they need to do their job, to put it in front of a casting director to get you that audition, to get you in the room. So all of that stuff is just, you know, incredibly valuable. But yeah, go where your film is going to go. If it's screening and it's possible for you to be there, because you never know who you're going to meet. And a lot of it, it's a very casual, repeated interaction. It's not that you meet people and it's this aha big, you know, thing. It's just you meet them, hey, nice to meet. But you sort of see them again, and then there's this comfort level, and then they'll introduce you to the person they're talking to because they sort of know you now. And then you'll talk to somebody and somebody's name will come up, or they'll bring up your name. And it's all this very much this, you know, you hit the sort of critical mass saturation point of being known and then, you know, you keep walking into rooms and more people know you. And then they go, oh, wow, all these other people know you. I guess I should know you too. So it's that kind of, you just kind of plant the seeds and you just kind of keep nurturing them.
You should keep it at 20 minutes or so, or under 20 minutes or 30 minutes. Or
yeah, well.
All right, so now I'm back to you. Yep.
I mean, you know, we have a limitation of 30, but like Jeffrey said, a lot of them have, there's, you know, a rule of thumb that maybe short should be between 10 and 20, or not much longer and not much shorter.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you,
okay,
man.
Guys.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much
all
I really wanted.
Good luck.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. And thanks for all the information. We'll keep in touch for sure.
More than welcome.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. And look forward to having you guys join us. Again, guys, got some fantastic Action Cut seminars coming up. So hope you get a phenomenal bonus that we'll not be seeing again. So encourage you all, just actioncut.com. And look forward to seeing you at the seminars. And thank you also very much for being here. Guy, thank you for being here. And
thank you, Philippa, and I thank everybody, and I wish everybody well that's listening.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right, guys, have a great night. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right, thanks, everyone. Take care.